Once again, it's Phil Parr. You probably remember me. Just sort of like an uncle that comes into your home once. We say once in East Texas because they can't pronounce once. Once a week with a little show called Blind Like Me. We hope you enjoy it, and we hope you'll come be a guest. Today we're going to... did I start this? Let's see. As Phil starts this... There we go. All right, we missed a minute. I always forget to do that. You'd think someone would remind me to do that. Anyway, we're going to do a little reminiscing today. Talk about, might even bring up John Bennett. We're going to talk a little bit about radio. We're going to go back into the old days because me and this boy have known each other. Boy, hell, he's how old are you? 60 what?
I'll be 67 this coming... Let's see, is that right? Born in 1941.
Born in 41. So you'll be 60.
Yeah, in November.
You'll be 67 in November. I'll be 68 for you, 67. Jimmy Mann, welcome to Blind Like Me, sir.
Howdy.
You run this show on North Texas Radio, so you've heard lots of these. You're pretty familiar with
it. I have heard most all of the Blind Like Me shows. I've heard most all of the Blind Handyman shows. I've heard most all of Cooking in the Dark.
Cooking in the Dark. Old Dale Campbell. Dale, I bought a clock from Dale Campbell that is the neatest thing in the world. It's an atomic clock. And I got it, and I went off to do something. When I came back, it had set itself.
It's probably got a system in there, like some of the clocks do nowadays. It's all done automatic. It's all done from a little computer chip.
Well, I think it checks with WWV, the National Bureau of Standards, in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Fort Collins, Colorado, yes.
WWV, one of the great constants in my life. So you're 66 and still working radio, on the fringes of radio like I always was, or I don't know, it's never, you know, I guess if you worked at WJJD in Chicago, you'd really be in radio, but... anyway, radio is your passion and has been since we were kids.
Since we were at the Texas School for the Blind.
Yeah.
Back in, 57, I believe, when you had your little preamp and we made like radio.
Well, we had turntables, a double set of turntables, at least that double set, and we had that little mixer that my father built me.
Yeah.
That had, it had four little pots on it, and you flipped the switch to the right, and you were on cue, and to the left, and you were back, you were on the air. It's amazing how close we got, you know, without knowing anything.
What we did at that time was perfect for what was happening out in the industry.
Yeah.
I mean, just like today at North Texas Taping and Radio for the Blind, a reading radio resource, where I've worked now for 23 years, the equipment that we have would surprise you because it is top-grade commercial. Everything is done from a digital standpoint, and it's just awesome to use this type of stuff because it's what you find out in the real world.
Oh yeah, it's real radio. I talked to Steve Cummings. He got a grant and bought a bunch of.
We have three boards. We have three boards that are identical in three different studios. You could actually run three studios at the same time. Also in that room, we have seven CPU units where we're downloading and mixing things together that goes out over the air. As a matter of fact, there is an air computer that is set up with a monitor in there. Now, what I use, because we haven't got into this yet, and that is my vision.
Yeah.
I am what people refer to as a high partial.
Very high partial. You see about like Don Patterson.
I probably see maybe a little bit better than... I'm right on the edge of what they refer to as being not legally blind. You know, I'm right there at that mark as far as my vision goes.
Yeah.
I have trouble seeing at a distance. I have to read with a magnifying glass. The computer that I use is set up with large print. Everything is large print. The cursor is large, and it's so it'll go through colors and so that I can see it better, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's how I do what I do. I don't use JAWS. I don't use any of the speech programs that are out there. But I do use a lot of the visual stuff, just like at the house here. I have a my computer screen is 24 inches.
That's a big monitor. That's
yes,
a big
it
old.
Is.
Well, yeah, you were high partial. I remember in school, you were quite high partial. Don sees quite well. We'll have to get you all together sometime and talk about that.
It's been a long time since I've seen Donald Patterson.
I guess it has, because he left. I think like in 55, he quit us and went to public school, and you and I stayed at the blind school.
I left in 60. In the spring of 60 was my last year there at the School for the Blind.
Well, in 58, they wrote a letter and asked me not to come back.
We all get those little letters. You know?
I don't understand that, why they'd want to get rid of a sterling fellow like me. I wasn't learning anything and was very disruptive. They needed to probably get rid of me. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Let's get back, as we always do with everybody, to your childhood. You say you were born in 41.
I was born in 41. I was born in a place called Casita, Georgia. It's right there in Tallahatchie County, and close to Fort Benning. My dad was in the Army.
Oh, yeah?
So I was an Army brat, and I got drug all over the country.
Well, you ended up in the Valley of Texas, the Rio Grande Valley of Texas.
I spent from 1949 until 1963 in the Rio Grande Valley. I was one of those kids who was from McAllen.
So I guess you came to the blind school in 49. To the Texas school.
I came to the blind school in 50.
In 50, okay.
I was there, and I spent two months in 50. March 31st is when I was there. That's when I first started.
In 50.
And then I spent that 2 months, and then came back that September.
What caused your vision problem? Do you know? Does anybody know?
My vision problem was caused because my mother had measles.
Oh.
And it not only affected my eyes, but it affected my heart. I've had heart problems all my life. I was the 10th baby to survive a particular patent ductus operation in the 40s in the world. I was the 10th one to survive the operation.
You know, I do remember that. I had forgotten that you had, even back at the blind school, you were aware that you had some problems.
I was big PE.
Yeah.
And I loved it. Hey, I could beat half the track team as it was.
But I had forgotten that. So back then that was pretty common. Lady had measles. Well, usually there was something wrong with her baby. Oftentimes it caused blindness. And do you have brothers and sisters, or are you an only child? Or?
No. I have a sister who's 11 months, 4 days younger than I am. And I have a brother who was born in 49, and they both see perfect, both have no heart problems whatsoever.
Did they send you, when you were 6 or 7, did they send you to the Georgia School for the Blind, or what did they do?
No. When I was 6 and 7, when I first started school, I was living in Texarkana area. And I went to, I live in Texarkana, Arkansas. I went to the county courthouse. They had a room on the top floor where they handle all their handicapped people.
Okay, and so they put you up there. Did they? What did they didn't teach? They never did teach you Braille, though, did you? You don't need Braille.
When I started school in Austin, they had the sight print, and I didn't have to get my nose down to read. I could read it a little further.
Yeah,
below, you know?
Yeah, they had already started.
They started me out as a print student to begin with. I didn't learn Braille till, when I got out of school. I had already started my massage training, and the people that I worked with were blind.
Yeah.
And total. And they used Braille, and I figured the only way I'm going to communicate to leave messages back and forth on supplies is I'm going to have to learn a little bit of Braille. So I did like Mr. Lewis did. I learned to read with my eyes.
Yeah, they had already started. By the time you came, and I remember when they did this, they put up these huge light fixtures in the ceiling. They retrofitted that building, and I remember the year they did that. It took forever. And they call that sight-saving classes. So you could read. They were big, bright.
Yeah, I was in Miss Biggs's class.
Those lights really, really heated up a room, and that allowed you partial sighted persons to read print, which was great. You know, as poor old Don, they started him. They started him out as a Braille student, and like I said, he sees...
That's because they didn't have the print back then when he started. But I think if I was to be of any part of any organization where you were teaching kids who were that young, I believe I would first start them out learning Braille, whether you could see the print or not, because I have met so many of my classmates and friends that I have who later on in life lost their vision totally.
Yeah.
And this has always come back to the point where they could rely on Braille.
Yeah. Well, you know, Don Patterson was able, with his Braille skills, to parlay himself into a teaching job here at Lufkin High School, teaching Braille and mobility and things. Of course, he had a degree, but he was, because of his Braille, I think that's the lady he ended up marrying was his boss there at the high school. First thing she asked him was, do you know Braille? And he said, yes. Matter of fact, I learned Braille. And do you know computers? Yes, I do. And so, bingo. He worked for 4 years at our high school here in town, and also worked out at the college. And Don Shaw, my friend Don Shaw, works at the college, who knows Braille and is able to help those kids. So, no, yeah, that's a good idea, to go ahead and teach them Braille in case their vision gets worse in later in life.
Well, another friend that you know that we went to school with, Gary Patterson, he could see a little bit in school. He could see good enough to get around without running into things. And when I met him later on when he was going to UT in Austin, he had lost all of his vision. He was a complete total.
Oh, man. He was a lot younger than us, wasn't he? No.
Gary Patterson was in my class in school. The people who were in my class in school were Joyce Milton, Dolores Sombrano, Douglas Williams at one time, Gary Patterson, Glenn Brown.
Kathleen Coulter. No?
She was, yeah, at one time she was. Mary Frances.
Yeah.
Carla Shook. She's married now and been with the guy that I hired years ago to work in a health club when I was in the massage business.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of the other. Anyway, there's a few more people, and I've tried to keep track of these people. J.W. Terran was in my class.
Who is that? I missed that name.
J.W. Terran.
Okay, I knew J.W. quite well.
And I've tried to keep track of most of these people through the years. And I'm still trying to do. There's still a bunch of people that I'd like to find who went to the school for the blind in the 50s.
Well, like who? Who?
Oh, God, there's a bunch of people that get a hold of Mike Oakley.
Yeah.
I'd like to find Clyde McCoy again.
Yeah?
I'd like to find J.W. again. I last lost
him. As far as I know, J.W. has passed away.
Oh, okay.
I knew J.W. because his mother was involved in our transportation back and forth to San Antonio. There was Gene Ellis.
Oh, okay.
And so I knew Vonel Turin pretty well, and I'm almost positive that J.W. and I think Douglas also has passed away. If somebody knows different, let me know. I called him in... I don't know, on his birthday, seemed like last year, and the number had been disconnected. And so I think he's probably deceased.
I haven't heard about that one now.
I think he's probably deceased also.
See, the people that have passed away in the class that I was in, that you may remember, are Doyle Davis.
I knew that. I did.
He's passed away. Paul Richardson, he was in our class.
I knew that.
He's passed away. We have several people now that are in real bad health, but I can't, you know.
Well, you got to face it, Jimmy. We're getting old. We're old.
Well,
hey,
that's what I'm finding out. You know, and I'm finding out that you know, there's a lot of. I've been real blessed in life. There's a lot of things in life that I enjoy. I feel very fortunate to you know, make it on to junior college, and I got my degree from UTD.
Yeah.
Got my BA degree from there. It was, of course, I was older in life.
That's all right.
I think I appreciated it more, and I appreciate, you know, things like that.
So. All right. Did you graduate from Texas school?
No, I did not.
You quit.
I graduated from Wichita Falls High School.
Oh, is that right? They moved your father to Wichita Falls during the school.
I had left, and well, it's a long story. In '63, I had moved completely from. My massage training in different places that I worked at, I had moved all the way from Brownsville to Corpus to Abilene to Denver. And
well, let's get you out of high school first. How'd you end up in Wichita Falls?
I moved there from Denver.
Okay.
I spent 3.5 years in Denver working for the YMCA up there.
Is that right? And then you went and graduated high school?
Oh, I did that later, yeah. I went back when they had continued adult education class, and I worked at a credit and a half a semester till I finished.
So basically you quit the blind school. You gave up on blind school. Yeah.
Yeah, they sent me one of those little letters.
Oh, did they? You got one, too.
Mr. Allen said,
yeah.
We can have you back here next year.
Yeah, boy, you're not doing any good. We don't need you.
That's right, yeah.
If they did that today, we'd own the blind school. You couldn't do that to a student today. We'd own the blind school.
The way the blind school was ran, like any Texas institution, made no difference. You put the name on it you want. They were all ran the same.
But you couldn't.
But you couldn't do that nowadays.
No, they couldn't treat a blind child like that. Tell him that we don't want to educate you. If he was 21, maybe. But I was 18, and anyway, so they sent you a letter, said don't come back. And what did you think? Well, golly, here I am blind.
I figured, well, let me see now. How am I going to compete? How am I going to compete in school? So there's a lot of things that happened. The home situation wasn't quite like what it should be, so I wound up in Rio Hondo with a family. That was nice. They took me in and
down in the valley,
raising.
Yeah,
and I went to Rio Hondo High School that year, and the superintendent and the principal said, "Well, Jimmy, hey, we want you to be educated. Is there anything that we can do to help you along with your education?" And it was like, God, where have I landed?
And the blind school had told you not to come back. See, that's what a deal.
And so I went to school there 1 year. And the people that I was staying with were having financial problems, so they said, "Do you want to go to school or do you want to learn a job?" And I said, I think I'll go to work. So I went to the Texas rehab in Harlingen, and they got me into the massage business.
Massage therapy, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did they pay
so
for your training?
I worked massage therapy from 61 to 71, and I had a great trip all the way from Brownsville clear to Denver in 1 year. I had 5 jobs in 1 year, and I figured, God, I don't like this. Why can't I stay at one place?
Why did you have 5 jobs in 1 year? What caused
that? Because the places played out. I had the place in Brownsville folded up, the place in Corpus Christi that I worked at. Holiday Hill Studios figured they could hire a couple cheaper than they could hire two, a man and a woman, you know. So I went on from there to Abilene. And in Abilene, I worked for the Sonic Club, and then I had a doctor, Dr. Vonner, who hired me away from there, and I worked in his hospital. And I went from vets where, because another guy you remember from the School for the Blind, his name is Lester Crowe.
Yeah, I knew Lester quite well.
Him and I were working in Abilene together, and we said, which one gets the job when a job comes up? We'll bring the other one aboard. So he got a job in Denver, and I followed him to Denver. And I had to get a license, which was, wow. Boy, that was wonderful.
Get a license in Colorado.
That protected your job.
Yeah.
So I worked in Denver for 3.5 years. And when I left, I talked him into hiring a guy from Austin, Henry Gonzalez.
Yeah.
He took my place in Denver.
Yeah.
And he stayed there until he passed away, you know?
Now, I was fixing to say Henry is deceased. But I guess massage therapy is almost like nightclubs. You know, you always think of a club where you're working. You better take your stuff home tonight because tomorrow the club may be closed and padlocked and your equipment.
Well,
you know.
Not anymore, because most of the United States is licensed now. It's not like what it used to be. Even here in the state of Texas, they went licensed several years ago, and I didn't. When I worked here, it was at the time when it wasn't licensed.
Yeah.
But I got out of it in 71, came to Dallas, and I started working at Mizell Photo with John Bennett.
Started processing a film.
Yes, I worked in film. John Bennett worked in paper.
Yeah.
And I was there for 13 years. You know, and
yeah.
So it was a good job. Hey, it was with a large firm. It was a recognized company. I enjoyed my work. I enjoyed the people that I worked with. It was fun.
You know, a boy's got to do what he's got to do to make a living, even if he is partially blind. So that takes us to did you marry during this time? Did you have anybody?
Yes, I was married. I got married in '65 the first time.
Is that right?
Yeah. And I married Joyce Melton. Now she's Joyce Smith.
I know Joyce quite well. How long were you married to Joyce?
Oh, God, 7.5 years.
Linda Joyce.
Yeah, huh? Yeah, she's young.
Yeah, is that right? I did not, you know, I didn't know that. I really didn't keep up with everybody.
And,
I was.
And then I was like a whole lot of the blind people. I married again, then I'm married again.
Yeah.
Then I figured, okay, hey, it's time to get out of this. And the young lady, I call her young because she's older than me, but she's a wonderful, wonderful lady that I'm with.
And she takes good care of Jimmy.
She looks after me really well. Her kids like me. It's just the best situation. When you're older, age doesn't make any difference because you have experienced so much of life. That's what makes the difference.
Doesn't make any difference. You marry anybody else I know?
Yeah, I married Joe Helen for a while.
I did not know. Well, let's see. I did know that. I knew that for a while. Is Joe Helen still alive?
Yeah. Huh?
Is Joe Helen still alive?
Yes, she came. Matter of fact, she sat behind us at John Bennett's funeral.
Did she come to John's funeral? That's wonderful.
Yes, she did.
How is her hearing? Can you communicate with her at all?
She has some, but I didn't talk to her that much.
Yeah.
We were there talking to other people that I hadn't seen in about 10 years or better.
I would love to see her.
Some of them that were there, it was wonderful at his funeral because I did have a chance to meet people that I hadn't seen in almost 20 years.
I guess that's true.
And I went to Chester Pogue's funeral when he passed away.
Well, John Bennett was quite well known. John and Joe Helen and I lived together several times at different apartments in San Antonio and Austin. And I, you know, it's just, now that you mentioned John Bennett, let me just tell one real quick John Bennett story. John Bennett had John Bennett is a friend that Jimmy and I both went to school with, and John Bennett passed away. month or so ago. What day was it? You would know. What do you remember?
It was it was on the 27th
of January.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a month and a half ago, and John was quite well known. John had gotten around, and John was, I guess, as well known in the Texas blind community as anybody. John had an unusual sense of humor. I don't know why this sticks in my mind, but we were cooking. He and I and Joellen were in the kitchen, obviously drinking beer as we did, cooking. You can't imagine that, can you? Drinking beer and cooking. We were cooking hamburger steaks and French fried potatoes. And I remember Joellen saying, "Man, these French fries are really long." And John waited a minute and he said, "Well, compared to North Lamar, they're not." So that was John Bennett's sense of humor. It isn't funny to anybody else, but it just knocked me out. That was John Bennett had that unusual sense of humor of saying the wrong thing at the right time occasionally. Anyway, go ahead.
He had like I said, I've known him since 1950.
Yeah.
And I went to see him out in El Paso several times. He's the reason why I came to Dallas. To go to work. You know, I mean,
yeah.
But he had a job for me before, but I was off flying around in Europe. I mean, I've been a blessed person. I've been to 14 foreign countries and been to over 40 of the states. And out of the 254 counties in the state, I've been in 214 of them. So it's, like I said, I feel a very blessed individual.
You have been.
I have met a lot of people along the way, and I've had a chance to help a few, and I think that's wonderful when you can, you know.
All right, so we got you in Denver, and then you came back to Dallas in the early 70s.
No. From Denver, I went to Wichita Falls and stayed there for 4 years and 9 months.
All right, but you ended up back in Dallas working photo finishing.
Yes, I did in 1971. Uh-huh.
Yeah. How did your foreign travel come about? How did you do that?
Oh, I would. I love to travel. I mean, I used to. You know, I'd be up there in Wichita Falls, and I'd have a weekend off or 3 days off, and I'd say, I haven't been to Canada, so I'm going to go. And off I went. And that was that way. I have never had the stigma to not go somewhere. I have been in towns where I knew nobody.
Yeah.
Felt perfectly right at home. Stigma to not go somewhere. I have been in towns where I knew nobody.
Yeah.
Felt perfectly right at home. I mean, I have always been comfortable with traveling and going around, because you remember at the School for the Blind, I had to travel 300 miles by bus just to get from Austin to McAllen.
It was a good ways, so, wasn't it? It was a good jaunt.
So it makes you where you're not afraid to do things later on, you know? Because you've already been there. You've done that.
Well, of course, you had the advantage also of having a little better sight than a lot of us.
I think when you're talking about blind people, the sighted world looks at you as, okay, either you're blind or you're not blind.
That's right.
And their vision of that is you don't see anything. And if you see something and you try to explain to them, they get lost with it.
They don't understand partial-sighted people. I know that.
They don't.
They you tell them that you're blind, and they will, you know, if you're blind, how did you hit that baseball? Or how come you didn't run into that door? Why don't you have a dog? Or, you know, that kind of thing. I understand that. So you traveled and you went overseas by yourself, or took your wife?
Yeah, I went by myself. Yeah, I had a brother, and my brother and sister were both. My brother was stationed in Germany. My sister was in Holland, and I flew over there and spent a couple of weeks over there. And then after I left them, I went and took a place I had always wanted to go in my life. Was always wanted to go to Finland. So I went to Finland and went up to the Arctic Circle, to a place called Romahini. Arctic Circle. And I did one thing there that not too many blind people have a chance to do.
Like what?
I got my reindeer driver's license.
Your what?
My reindeer driver's license.
I didn't know you had to have a driver's license to drive reindeer.
Well, you do. There's a speed limit, and there was a course you had to go. It's like a reindeer that is pulling a dugout canoe type of thing. And the first thing it is, I rolled out of it when you made a turn, so I had to go back and redo it again.
So you rolled it?
Yes.
Really?
I had to go back and do the course again, because you're in this course with these trees that are probably about 3.5 feet tall, is just as far as you can see. And there's snow on the ground. I mean, it's cold, but not nearly as cold as standing on the corner of 9th and Scott in Wichita Falls, though.
Now,
that's the coldest I've ever been.
Are you saying there are trees on the ground? Is that what you said? There are little short trees?
Yes, there's trees up there. This is just as you cross the Arctic Circle. The tundra is further north.
And you had to watch for these trees, but the snow was almost as deep as the trees. I mean, it's almost as high as the
trees.
Yeah,
but the reindeer would pull you in this little dugout thing so you didn't sink in the snow.
Well, of course, you didn't need this. You just decided this would be fun?
Yes. I went up there. It was my first. I prefer colder weather better than I do the hot, like Houston type weather. And so I figured, hey, it'd be great to go to the Arctic Circle. So I did, by myself. And it was very enjoyable. I had a great time up there.
That's a pretty nervy thing for a blind boy to do. What did you think you were going to do up there? You just wanted to go look around and see what it was all about?
That's right. Yeah, I just said, hey, I've never been here. I've read about it in my books. If you go back in history, it was at that time when I went. It was the largest city on the Arctic Circle. It was as far north as the Second World War went. They had everything had been destroyed in that town except for one church.
Now, what was the city? What was the name of the city?
It's called Romahini.
Romahine.
No, Romahini.
Oh, Romahini. Okay. You pronounce it. I can't. Anyway, so
there hadn't been too many Americans up there at that time. They looked at me like, because I spoke English, and they said, "You're from England?" "No, I'm from the USA. I'm from Wichita Falls."
Of course, they didn't know what Wichita Falls was.
No,
no.
But see, that was right before I moved to Dallas.
Uh-huh. So, during all this traveling around and marrying, did you father any children or not?
No. Never had no children. But Betty's children, they love me and they enjoy me, and I treat them as though they're my own. And also, the great great grandchildren are just they're just precious to me, you know.
So
they call me Grandpa. So I feel, it's great,
So how did you get from the film processing business? I guess that job died in sometime in the 80s, right?
In the 80s, about 82, 83, it took a dive. And I was without work for some time, and I had done occasional radio work when I was in Wichita Falls. I did some assignment stuff for KSYD Television Channel 3.
Uh-huh.
I knew the guy who owned the station. He'd come into the club, being in the massage business did have its advantages. You had a chance to meet the upper 10% who owned a lot of stuff in the community and who did things from a business standpoint, you know. So that helped.
Now, did he?
So I went on assignment down to the state basketball tournament in Austin for them a couple of years, and reported back about what was going on at the state basketball tournament.
Did he still own the radio station at that time?
At that time he did, yes. Uh huh.
That was KSYD. That was 990?
Yeah, Channel 3. It was Channel 3 at the time.
Channel 3. But you did television, not radio.
Yeah, I did it like it was radio. I'd call in to their recorder, and when they would do their news back then, they would bring it in. They would pot it up and say, well, we have our correspondent in Austin for the station, and bring it up, and I'd tell them about the scores and this sort of thing, and then they'd, it'd go out, you know.
But there was no camera action at
no,
this
no.
time. This was just audio.
Right, uh-huh.
Yeah. Okay, and I guess they paid you to do that.
Hey, the pay that they paid me was going in as a working press person.
Uh-huh.
The only way to attend anything, man.
I know that. And your pay was actually, the trip was your pay.
Oh, yes. Hey, I could walk in 5 minutes before the game, go up to the upper level, go get the press pack that you were supposed to have, sit down there with a guy from Kerrville Radio on one side of me and another guy from over in the Houston area, but I don't remember what his name is right offhand, and I had the best seat in the house.
Yeah, that was pay enough, wasn't it? Yeah.
Hey, it was wonderful.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
All right, but you couldn't eat that. You couldn't live on that. You had to find yourself a job.
Oh, no, I was still working at the Y in Wichita Falls at that time.
Is that right? When was this? In the 80s? In the early 80s?
No, I worked for the Y in Wichita Falls from May of 66 to end of February of 71.
This was before you did film processing? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, well, after film processing, what did you do then? What happened?
I went to the commission and was asking about jobs and stuff, and they were testing people, and so they said, well, we're going to send you down to the White House in Houston, Texas. And I said, what for? And they said, well, they've got an IBM test down there. We want to see if you have the academics for what it takes to for computers.
Yeah.
And I said, okay. So I passed the IBM test in Houston. And they said, hey, look, we figure you'd do well with computers. So they sent me to college. And I went to El Central College, and I graduated from there with a applied arts and science degree in small business computers and also an associate degree and also with a technical certificate, which means you can operate the floor, basically what that means.
Yeah.
And then I went and tried to look for work, and people said, you don't have 4 years of education. So I went back to them, and I said, I need some more education. So I went to UTD, University of Texas at Dallas. And I went to school there and started out majoring in business. They told me about this one course that I wasn't ready to take. And I said, gee, I'm going to transfer over to interdisciplinary studies. That way all my stuff transferred over. So I graduated with a Bachelor of Arts degree. And at the same time I was doing all this, I was working at North Texas Taping and Radio for the Blind. I mean, there were times I'd go straight from school straight to work.
So you got a four-year degree?
Yes, I did, uh-huh.
What a thing. When was what time of the world was this? What, in the 80s or
90s? This was in the early 90s.
Is that right?
See, I'm an all mixed up kid, you know.
No, I think you've had
I just started a little slow in life.
I think you've had a pretty good life. I think you, like you said, I think you've done a lot of things that a lot of us didn't get to do. I consider myself a blessed person, but you've gone a lot of places and done a lot of things. You can't, you know, you can't knock that.
And I am very happy to find out that people with vision problems.
Yep.
And who are legally blind are traveling more, that they're yep. going on ship.
Oh, man.
That they are, I've been twice on, once to Alaska, once to eastern Canada.
Uh-huh.
I think it's wonderful. The best education you can have is to travel.
You know, Jimmy, because life is what happens while you're making plans.
Yeah.
When you think about it. You don't plan it. It just kind of happens to you. So you got this four-year degree. Were you ever able to get a job with that degree?
No. It just helped enforce what I'm doing now, because when the reel-to-reels ran out and everybody went over to computers, I already had that education. I already knew about computers.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like, no, I'm need to learn how to do that. No. I already knew how to do it.
Yeah, but, of course, at the time, you had no idea how ubiquitous or how all-important computers were going to be, because none of us
That's
knew that.
That's true.
None of us
That's
knew that.
True.
We were all basically in the dark. None of us really knew just how important computers were going to end up being.
Well, the best thing that I think I've ever heard in my life came from Russell Stevens, and he said that the computer today is like what Louis Braille was to Braille. And to me, that makes a wonderful, wonderful statement.
Oh, I think computers have had as much impact on blind people as the invention of Braille. I agree with him.
Oh, yeah. And I just think it's wonderful, you know, because it gives all of us the same level, the same advantages everybody else has.
Well, maybe not quite the same advantages. I can't do everything on the computer that my wife can do or that sighted people can do, but it certainly did put us all on the same page. I mean, if there's a new piece of equipment, you know about it at the same time I do. If you're on lists and you communicate with other blind people, we're all on the same page. We talk. We have lists like Cooking in the Dark. We exchange recipes. We have a Blind Like Me list where we just talk about all kinds of things. They were talking about, they were doing product reviews on this list of products that work for blind people. So we're all closer to being on the same page now than we've ever been. And my statement is, if you have to be blind, it's a wonderful time, you know.
This is the generation for it to happen in. If you look back, during the 50s was the time for people who had, well, the 40s. Was a time for people who had cataracts. That was the main cause of blindness back then. In the early 50s, it was RLF, you know, as far as people having blind because
yeah.
of, you know, for that. And then you can trace this all the way up to when, like when I was in Houston at the Lighthouse, most of the people who had vision problems then was caused because of diabetes.
Yeah, that's common now also.
And the attitude is different than what we had at that time from a psychological standpoint.
It's amazing how many blind people I've interviewed that were harmed in incubators as children because they got too much oxygen, so it's a double thing. If they hadn't got the oxygen, they'd have died, but they got it, so they lost their eyesight. A lot of older blind people. All right, so you're working now at North Texas Radio, and that's what you do. What do you do for them?
I am a broadcast engineer and a recording engineer. On the weekends, I've always been a person, as you know, in radio. Your time schedule is not quite like a normal 8-to-5 job is, you know. I am a full-time, part-time, I'm on call all the time, but my basic time that I work is the weekend. And I record the newspaper of the air, first hour and second hour, on Saturdays and Sundays, which means you have a lot of different volunteers that you're working with and coordinating schedules with, this sort of thing. So you're putting that together and helping the volunteers throughout the building and this sort of thing.
What is that? What is the newspaper of the air? What is that?
The newspaper there is, we read from the Dallas Morning News and the Fort Worth Star-Telegram. We read all of the editorials. We read the top news. That's like front page news. It's done in a different way where we don't compete in line with the commercial radio stations in that manner, you know. It has sports. It has interesting articles in there. They read, you know, from the guidepost. They not from the guide, but from the guide. They read the business section has some articles that they read and keep track of in there, and they read sports. And just the, you know, we weather. We do Dear Gabby, and. You know, from both papers, you know, what they have.
What they don't do is read headlines. They don't read the news. They read other things in the paper.
That's true. They'll read stuff that's done differently. And as you know, in radio, we used to get all of our stuff off the United Press and Associated Press wire services. Well, the way that's set up and written is different than the way that the newspaper is written. And, of course, in the old days, we had to add our commas, and we had to add punctuation and this sort of thing. Of course, it was all cut up in five-minute segments. So
do they actually read the newspaper?
Yes, they do.
Physical newspaper. That's amazing.
Yes. The physical newspaper, word for word, and it's written.
And so you coordinate all the volunteers. Do you do that or somebody else?
No. We have a volunteer coordinator, okay. Nancy Adrian. She's a volunteer. Of course, our agency director is Betty Hersey. She's in charge of the agency. And of course, you know, Steve Cummings, he's the station manager.
He's in charge of everything.
Betty Hersey.
If you don't believe Steve Cummings is in charge of everything, just ask him.
Well, I just know he's a
Steve is a friend of mine,
a good
Jimmy.
Boss, and that he has what we need from the world of radio because he's been in it a long time, and that's really what we needed is someone who really knew the business. From a business type of standpoint, you know.
I'm just kidding about Steve. I know Steve quite well. He's a friend of mine, and, but he's a good radio man. You're lucky to have him.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I'm trying to remember how long he's been there. 5 years now? God, I get to losing track of time because of, you know, 23 years there. I spent a year at KCHU. I've done little bits and pieces for other radio stations, you know, earlier in time. You know,
well, what is KCHU? What is that?
It was an FM station. It's back when I did Jim's Country Caravan.
What is Country Caravan, and what did you do in KCHU? Tell us about that.
It was a oldies country show. It's the type of music you don't find nowadays on radio.
I believe you called me and interviewed me one time on that show, uh-huh. I think. Do you have that interview?
Yes, I do. Still have it.
Once you dub that to CD, I'd like to hear that.
As a matter of fact, I played the tape for Betty of your music, and she loves it. The original recording that you had of Mama, man, it's fantastic.
Well,
I'm surprised that didn't go any further than what it did.
Huey Moe put that out three times. He thought he had a hit, and he put it out three different times, and we never were able to get it going. But anyway, so you have a tape of that interview. I'd like to hear that sometime.
Okay.
You can put that on CD for me. Do you know how to do that? Can you do that?
I can get it done, yeah.
Well, if you have a reel-to-reel, I can do it. That's not a problem. I have several CD.
Oh, yeah, I have reel-to-reel. Sure do.
Well, if you have reel-to-reel.
I still have the original tape from 1968.
And it'll still play, amazingly enough.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure will.
Those old tapes, I have tapes from Texas City back in the 60s, back when the air checks years ago. I need to dump those to CD one of these days. If I ever let anybody hear them, they're horrible. I don't know why they kept me. It was terrible. Anyway.
The thing I'm looking for now is I'd like to find the Tommy Tolleson CD. It was collectors put it out.
You'd like to find what now? Tommy Tolleson's what?
CD.
A Tommy Tolleson CD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you remember Tommy.
I remember Tommy quite well. You mean John Bennett didn't have it?
No. There was a lot of stuff of different blind people that I found for John Bennett. That all the earlier Bobby Dahl stuff. Because every time I'd go travel somewhere, one of the places I'd go is I'd say, is there a music bin here? Is there a record bin over there? And I'd go find it, and every time I'd go somewhere, I'd find something. May not find a whole lot, but I'd always come up with one or two albums or something.
I was thinking that John Bennett sent me a tape or a cassette one time that had a couple of Tommy Tolleson songs on it.
Well, this was, when I read this in one of my music books, it really surprised me. Because there's a little paragraph and a little thing about him in there. And he's on Collector's Records. And it gave us the number, but I cannot find it anywhere. I figured maybe I'd have to go check out KVIC in Victoria or one of those radio stations down along the line.
You better do that quick, because I'm sure that they're like everybody else. Those kids don't mind throwing records away, and so if you're going to do that, you better do it. Have you Googled Tommy Tolleson's name yet? Have you done that? Have you tried that?
No, I haven't, because I know he passed away years ago.
Well, there may still be some information about him. Tommy. It's really funny. I was working in Houston. I was playing clubs at night and working radio in the daytime and also working a little television show. It's called the Utah Carl Show, brought to you by Gulf Coast Furniture Wear. Anyway, we were sitting in the coffee room reading the mail for that week, and in walked Tommy Tolleson. You know, big, loud Tommy. Hello there. Hi, everybody. Hi, and looking for Phil Parr, you know. And we put him on the show that week. On the television show, and then I went down to Palacios and played a couple of jobs down there. This was back in probably 66, somewhere around there. That's the last time I saw the boy. I don't know how long he lived, but he was quite a piano player and singer and entertainer.
Well, I tried to keep up through the years with people from the School for the Blind who are into music, and done a fairly decent job with it.
Yeah, somebody said that Bobby Hicks had I'll have to call Bobby and ask him, had a tape of the Swing Kings, somebody said.
I don't know if he has that or not. I do have a tape of Bobby Hicks and his family band that was that I have on recording that was done in 66 on Reel to Reel.
Yeah, Bobby was going to come last time we had John Connolly down, Bobby was going to come and ended up, yeah. Mary Frances had some health problems. You ought to ride down with John Connolly sometime and come to one of our little blind weekends where we don't do anything but sit around and talk and drink and eat.
Well, I would sure like to see Donald Patterson. It's been a long time. I have, like I say, I have a lot of blind friends that I'm in contact with. You know, in a week's time, I probably talk to at least a half a dozen people that I went to school with. And it's just wonderful to have this friendship that has lasted over 50 years.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I think John Bennett came to the blind school about the same time you did. I think he came in 49.
He was there. He came a year later than I. He came in 51.
Did he come in 51? I know that I've known both of you for, I guess, about 58 years.
Like forever.
About 58 years. We were with an old boy one time. You and I were with a guy one time that was going to commit suicide, and he decided not to.
Yeah.
I don't know why we were doing that. Of course, we were just kids. We were just 13, 14 years old. But this boy was going to. That's terrible. When you think when you look back on all that stuff, it's amazing we made it. But we did. Listen,
I'm just thankful to the good Lord that I have been able to help the people that I have. I've helped people from a medical standpoint. I've helped people get jobs. I've helped. So I just feel like any time that you can make an influence on someone else's life and it's for the better, then you've done something good.
Well, I tell you what, you and your lady get in the car and head toward toward old Lufkin, Texas, one of these days.
Oh, yeah. Betty does real well. She still drives, and like I said, she's a marvelous and wonderful companion. And we really talk. I mean, she reads to me. We communicate, and it's just great because we're interested in a lot of the same things.
Well, it's good that you have her. Everybody needs somebody. Anyway, my lady Luann is off making me a living, and I'm happy about that.
That's wonderful.
We've killed an hour, Jimmy.
Golly.
Can you believe it?
Well, don't you think it's time to do a promo for the Blind Like Me show?
Well, the Blind Like Me show will feature Jimmy Mann in the next couple of weeks. I don't know when I'll run this, but anyway, thank you, sir.
You may have to rearrange some of the time stuff in this, too.
No, sir, I don't edit. I just put it on like it is. We're not trying to be CBS Radio. We're just having a good time. I want to thank you.
I am having a good time, and it's wonderful, Philip. I really appreciate it, you know?
Well, you're about to be at the end of the show because we're out of time. Thank you, Jimmy, and I'll give you a call something and let you know on your cell phone and let you know when the week we're going to run this. All right?
Okie dokie.
Thank you. Well, what we didn't do, the one thing we didn't do is give Jimmy's email address, and he wanted that on so that if anyone wanted to get in touch with him, email him, they could do it. Let me give it to you if you can rewind the tape or do whatever you want to do. It is very, very simple. It's jimmyman@peoplepc.com. Jimmy Mann at peoplepc.com. That will get you in touch with Jimmy if you'd like to do that. All right? He wanted his email address on and suggested to anybody who remembers him or wants to talk or visit, write him. jimmyman@peoplepc.com. Hey, it's been fun. Come be a guest on the show. You can get a hold of me, Phil Parr. All one word, philparr@consolidated.net. philparr@consolidated.net. You can call me at 936-634-9500. That's my telephone number. We enjoyed it. Come be a guest on the show. Need about 80 guests a week and 80 guests a year, not a week. 80 guests a year. You might as well be one of them. Some folks even say it's fun and enjoy it. We'll see you next week. More Blind Like Me. Bye-bye.